TE Talks with Guides is a weekly podcast for lovers of history, travel, and all things Italian.
Dunque. Welcome back, everybody, to TE Talks, sponsored by Through Eternity Tours. I'm your host, Rob Allen, and on TE Talks, we get to talk with some of the most fascinating people who make a living out of being wonderful storytellers. We get to delve into what drives their passion. Now, today we have one of our favorite guests, Gracelyn. Ciao, Gracelyn.
Hello, Rob.
Ciao. How are you?
I'm divinely well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good myself. Thank you.
Great. Now, an interesting thing is that what we're going to be talking about is, well, Rome in a day. We have our TE destinations, which is going to be coming out soon, which deals with the subject. It's kind of a montage of lots of the other videos. And we are going to then make it into a series of how-to videos, because probably one of the biggest sellers that we have is seeing Rome in a day. And what a great time for us to do this, because I've more or less just finished a Rome in a day tour. Mine was a little customized. I took a group of people, three people on a private tour going to the Jewish quarter and then ancient city. But then they said to me, what about the Trevi Fountain, Piazza di Spagna and the Pantheon? I was like, sure, ask and you shall receive.
Why not?
Why not? Exactly. Now, I would love to hear from you, since you kindly reminded me that the first tour I ever made you do was a Rome in a day tour. Why don't you explain to everybody here what it is? What is a Rome in the day tour? Like, why do we provide it? What is done on a Rome in a day tour?
Yes, that was many moons ago. My first tour was, I was wondering, will they send me to the Colosseum first? Will they send me to St. Peter's first? Will they send me to the piazzas, the fountains first? No, they will send me to all of it. And that's basically what Rome in a Day is. And as you know, it is one of my favorite tours to give, because this is a tour that gives you this best overall taste of what Rome has to offer. Because when people come to Rome, they can't miss the Sistine Ceiling or St. Peter's Basilica or the Colosseum, but they want to throw their coins in the Fountain of Trevi and they want to maybe stop and have a gelato and see what the piazzas are like and what Roman life is like, wandering around, the shopping. Rome in a Day kind of covers all of that. You've got about 7 hours. Normally, those 7 hours, even though it sounds a lot on paper when people look at it, you know, whenever you do this tour, what happens when you go to say your goodbyes? People go, oh my God, what time is it? Oh my gosh, I can't believe we've been running around this city for that long. It goes quicker than you think. But I find that this is a tour that is a great solution for certain types of needs, whether it's short time or also somebody who wants to have much more free time. So they want to like get the most knowledge, get the most out of their first day. So they get a lay of the land and they pick this too.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of our clients are Americans, and they're wondering about what to do, and they're limited with time. You know, the average client that comes to Rome is about 3 days. And in those 3 days, they have a series of things that they want to do. And maybe sometimes they want to get through everything first, do like their due diligence and see what needs to be seen, and then have some free time to do things on their own or maybe do a day excursion or whatnot.
Sure.
But I think it's kind of a great opportunity for us. I think I do like it too. I like it because my whole kind of goal when I tell people about the city of Rome, because really, I mean, Rome is unique and for so many different reasons and there's so much to it. I think I want to inspire people. I want them to get a taste of Rome so that this is like, you know, the whole jalopy here. You know, you're getting like a big ice cream with three different flavors on it, which is like a classic thing when you go into gelateria.
Exactly. So you may never get one scoop.
Never get one scoop. So you want to do, let's say, okay, so ancient world, one scoop. Vatican City, two scoops. And then the fountains and piazzas, which is the third scoop with a little bit of sprinkle on top or something else like that. And so that, yeah, that maybe exactly. they like it and figure out which one they like the most. Or, you know, the idea is that, you know, they're going to love it so much after you take them through there that they'll want to come again and maybe go into more depth of stuff.
Which is very, very true, because there are so many times that we have repeat clients who maybe came in on a cruise ship. And this is such an amazing solution for coming in on a cruise, because it's really difficult coming from Civitavecchia and waiting for buses, waiting to go in. Normally, they drop you off at one point. But what we're able to do is literally get you, bring you directly, arrange. Everything is perfectly timed. You don't have to think about it. And then if we do our jobs, which is to give you the best taste of those three scoops of ice cream with the cherry on top, always, they come back. And you know that there's other tours they end up giving and say, oh yeah, I was here like 3-4 years ago and we got the taste of everything and realized, oh my goodness, this is a city to come back for. And you know, and sometimes it's a once in a lifetime trip. And you just want to get the most out of it and really understand from antiquity to Rome of the Renaissance to Rome of the Baroque and the beautiful fountains in the 1700s, you know, and doing something that gives you a taste of all of it can work, work best.
Now, a lot of things are coming up to my mind as I'm listening to you speak. There's a few different things. For example, do you change the tour at all? Do you change the structure of the tour, how it goes, what's supposed to be done, or do you try to stay the same way when you do this tour? When you meet people normally at a hotel or a set meeting point, do you always do the same thing first? Do you do the ancient city first, and then you do, well, how if you had your way, how do you prefer to do this tour?
Well, you know, sometimes it depends on the time of year, because if you're thinking about the archaeological sites, you're working off of the light, you know, so what we are doing in the summer months, you know, are not the same thing that we do in the winter months when those sites are closed much earlier than you want to save the Vatican for last. But in the summer, when they're open up until like 7:15, when they start clearing people out, there's no problem at all. But for me, no, we work off of our set tickets, our time tickets, different, you know, skip the line tickets, because it's a tour that needs to be, have at least certain aspects of it regimented. As for the rest, you know, when you do the first section with somebody, be it the Vatican or be it ancient city, you really start to get a feel for them as people, of their interest. If they're super interested in art, am I going to stay there a little bit longer? If maybe they really just wanted to see a taste, the Sistine, the Basilica, and move along, then I'll get them to more things outside. Or, you know, maybe they have seen the Fountain of Trevi and they want to see a different part of town. And then it's great to maybe hop a cab, go to Trastevere, walk through those beautiful medieval streets just to have lunch before you head your way over to see things like the Roman Forum or the Colosseum. So no, there's always, although you've got parameters that we have to work with, I find that there's always a little bit of leeway that you can kind of customize it as you're going.
Mm. Yeah, you know, I used to, back in the day, you know, when we didn't have such restrictions for the time, but, you know, I mean,
right,
clarify with people, now it's better because we can go with set times and we know that we won't have to wait too long in line. It used to be that we'd wait 2 hours in the Vatican or whatnot, but you would have a certain flexibility with it. And I always love to show people wherever their hotels were, kind of interesting things around the hotels before going on the day. I think another thing that I like to remind people when you do this is that this is for fun. You know, you're on vacation. In fact, I said that with my clients today. I was like, let's remember, guys, we're here to have a good time, you know. Let me know how it's going, right? You want to be able to read the people and understand their wants and needs and the levels that they have. It's great. It's such a job that I love because you just meet such interesting people doing this.
No, it's true. And you have to know when to stop and get a gelato or to stop and bring them to I think all of us have our own favorite gelateria, our own favorite coffee. I mean, if you talk to every single one of the guides, we'll probably give you a different place. But, you know, as you're walking through these back streets, we know them so well. So it's being able to read people, see when the energy level is dropping and might be getting tired for a second and just run, sit down on a bench, look at a beautiful fountain while you're licking a gelato, and then, you know, get a little bit of a sugar or a caffeine rush and move on to something else. But yes, absolutely. I think you need to be a little bit of a cheerleader because you're opening people up to some people it's new, whether it's the history part or whether it's the art history part, and for others it's not. And you know, those are the ones where maybe you're handling the questions differently or handling how intensive you're going differently, or if you have a family and kids, being able to read the children too. Happy children make happy mommies and daddies. So yeah. It's a mix.
Yeah. I think that's funny. That's the thing. And I know that we're going to be kind of emphasizing this a lot more with the groups, because we're not going to do in-depth tours, but we're absolutely, mm-hmm. We have different types of people who want different types of things. We do have people who love to get in-depth information, et cetera. But then we also have people who are with little ones, families, and, you know, automatically any of us, we know instinctively, yes. You direct the tours to the kids. And then the parents are happy, you know, and then if the parents want to kind of interject some kind of interesting questions to go through with it. It's an amazing opportunity to show people some places, because it's not just like, right, you know, it's not us just going to a place. As a guide, we know about the restaurants. Like you said, we have our favorite places. Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't have my just one. I have a few of them around town, depending on where we go. And I always love to go to these places. That makes a whole big difference, I think, for people, because then you get to chat with them, yes. Tell them about other stuff in your life, which I think is really, really a great opportunity for people. Now, let me ask you a few things to go along with this, which I think could be really, really cool. So you and I have been doing these tours. I've been doing them since 99, and you've been doing them about since 2007?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What, with these tours, do you have any specific memories or experiences with people or feedback, things like events that may have happened on these tours that are memorable to you?
Yeah, I would have to say quite a few of them actually on these tours. Let me think. I've had some people back when we didn't have time tickets and it was more of the crunch and hoping we would get there at the last minute. And I remember working with a lovely elderly couple and their daughter who brought them. And it was just this desire of their moms to get into St. Peter's. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was really, really difficult because, you know, there was difficulty walking and just knowing the things that we know. I was like, it's not a problem. We can get you there. You can do it. She was afraid that she would stop everybody else. And, you know, there's wheelchairs that you can utilize when you're in the museum and different places that you can scoot them through to get in a different way. And I remember when we were finally able to do everything with her and we were just standing in front of the Pietà, and it just watching her face and watching the daughter watch her mother's face. Mm. I literally got goosebumps. I had to step aside and just give them that quiet time because it just hit you. This person had waited their whole life to see this and didn't think that they would. And here they are. And if I remember correctly, they were in their mid-80s, but they did it and they got there. The rest of the day after that, because we did that in the morning, after that, it was like cake. They were the happiest people. And it's something that I absolutely, positively remember.
That's such a great key for a guide, is to be empathetic. But I think that's one of your talents too. Like, we each all have very, very different talents that we can do. You know, I think my talent is finding really good, talented people, good guides, is one of my skills. But I think yours is to be able to perceive, to observe people and understand them. And sometimes, because I even know you with me, you understand things about me that you know that's going on with me before I know that's going on with me. And I think you get that immediately with people. It's one of your skills. I remember a time that there was a client. You know, you do have these kind of lifetime experiences with people, because he was a person who was suffering from cancer. And he was a devout person. And, you know, he was tired, but his hotel was right near the St. Peter's. It was in the Borgo. And he's like, I think I'm just going to not go. And I was like, no, you do. You need to go. You need to come with us. And it was beautiful. Yeah, it was. It was beautiful.
Those are such special experiences. You know, that it's amazing. I think even more so than other tours, that you really form a bond with some of your clients, you know?
Yeah.
And because you're there for the whole day, and you, there's time, usually stop for lunch, and we always pick cute little places. And over lunch, everyone stops being, oh, you're the guide. Everyone just relaxes, you know, and you start to hear a little bit about their life. And usually they're curious too about us, like, why are you there? You know, how did you get there? So it gets more personal. So even by the second half of the tour, it gets really personal. So when you get to say goodbye, it's really lovely. And it's lovely when they come back too. And you get to see them. You get to see them again. But one thing I always remind myself too is, you know, these are precious memories. And like you said, your example and mine. So it's that reminder when I get up in the morning, you know, whether I'm tired or maybe have a bit of a headache or didn't sleep well that night, you know, I always remind myself that you never know that the person that you're guiding through a tour, especially somebody who has only one day to see the city and will take something like this with us, you know, you've got this really precious responsibility. And you have a responsibility, because what they remember of this city that we are all so in love with is what you can bring to it. So you're like, drink an extra coffee, slap, 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 get it, get it going.
That's true. You have to have a certain kind of energy. Another tour that I remember very distinctly was I was giving a tour, and they were allowing us in the Vatican museums during the conclave. I was there during the conclave for the election of Benedict XVI. And I remember it distinctly, because I don't think they would do this now, but they let us in the museums. We couldn't go into the Sistine Chapel. So, of course, that means that the museums were fairly empty. And in the Sobieski room, they literally put plastic, opaque panels on the windows. So you weren't even allowed to look directly at the Sistine Chapel from the Sobieski room. They had them on the windows.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't forget something like that. And I remember also because at the moment when John Paul decided, oh, you weren't even there, because it was 2005. Mm-hmm. They allowed us. And this is sometimes that happens that people don't understand, but you're like, no, you have to, you really don't understand, but you're doing something that I've never done or people don't get to do, and this will not be a permanent thing. So what you're doing is really special, because from the Sistine Chapel exit, they allowed us to go down the Scala Regia by Bernini, you know, the same staircase that they took John Paul II's body to the church. That was the way you exit. They were not allowing people to go to by the Sistine Chapel, through the Sistine Chapel exit. I remember that they took, like, for some reason, we were at St. Peter's Basilica. Like, for some reason, they did allow us to go through this. Or they took, you know what, that it was, I'm trying to think of it. If I went out from the museum the long way to get to St. Peter's Basilica, but then we went inside the church. We went outside of the church, and they had the stovepipe chimney set up at the Sistine Chapel. And I looked up and I said, they'd already had one vote earlier that day. And I said, okay, so they said, oh, by 5 o'clock, they're going to have the results. And I said, around 5 o'clock, it was like 3:30 or so, the smoke will come out. And the moment I was gesturing, the smoke came out. And then it was like, it was amazing, because it was that moment where things came alive, meaning the stuff that you and I study and talk about, it's like that smoke is coming into life. You know, it's like the things are set in motion, these traditions that are connected to Peter from 68 AD. Yes, they are by no means the same. They have changed, but they are all very, very connected. You know, we're not doing a Catholic tour here, because we do, of course, the ancient world. And there's one of the things there, but that was at that moment. And that moment with the square in like 30 minutes filled with like 200,000 people screaming for, you know, to find out who the new Pope would be. And then you look at the square, you see the facade. Did you go there when Francis was elected? Did you go?
Rob, because I remember you had told me this story. And I remember when they were in conclave, this is for Francis. And I had worked that day. And usually it's just like, I'm not going to now go back to St. Peter's, you know, when you're working. But I talked to a couple of friends and I said, no, this is historic. It's going to be black smoke. I said, they didn't make it. It was black for the lunch boat. I'm showing up for the, what is it, around 9:30. Usually if they're not, they don't have smoke by 9:30. That's when they go back to Santa Marta. So I did show up, and that was March 2013. And it was the same thing. I had just arrived, pointed up to the Sistine for a friend and said, no, you need to be looking over here. And she looked at me and said, looking over here, you mean where all the white smoke is? And I was like, ha, 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 very funny. And all of a sudden the bells started ringing. People went crazy. It was, once in a lifetime experience. But these are the stories that also you have to bring to the tours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's bringing the life when you're in the Sistine Chapel and you're trying to explain, you know, as you're leaving, remember, guys, this is where they're locked with key, and you see in the films and things that this is where it takes place. So it's even more real when you have these personal stories to add to it, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember like the cardinals, they pop up in the facade, then you realize how huge the facade is because they're so tiny. And I remember the Romans, when they announced, you know, Benedict said he was going to be Benedetto XVI, and then all the Romans, because, you know, they're kind of irreverent, they said, suona male.
And the Romans, all they said with Francis was, wait a minute, Bergoglio? He's an Italian. Then they're all looking up on their phones to find out who he was. Because yes, they could be irreverent, but they loved the idea when they chose Francesco.
I remember that year too, because they were all, the seagull was sitting on the chimney, and like everyone had these cameras focused on the chimney. That was another kind of an amazing election, because at that time, the Pope abdicated, Benedict XVI abdicated from the throne, exactly. Because remember, popes are kings. This Pope comes along and he's a Jesuit. He was the first Jesuit ever elected, and he is choosing the name Francis. No, there's no number behind him. No number, because he's the first one who's chosen that name. Yeah. I don't know if I would say the right word, ambitious, quite a message, I think he wants to send.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was quite a message. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, you and I both have a great love for the ancient world, as we've talked about Julius Caesar. This time we're talking about the Vatican. Do you, because I know clients ask people, what is your favorite place to show people? So you like Rome in a day, but do you have a favorite place that you like to show people? And I'll tell you, because I get that question asked me all the time, but my answer depends. So what do you tell people?
My favorite place to show, and it's funny because just the other day someone was asking me, what's your favorite tour? And it's really hard to say, because I love the Vatican. I enjoy standing under the Sistine, even waiting for clients, but I adore ancient Rome, Palatine Hill, you know, I love Ostia Antica, You know, we could make a list and go on and on and on. What would be my favorite? Wow. I think it really depends on who I'm bringing around, on my clients, because I love when you bring somebody into either maybe the Colosseum for the first time, and you bring them maybe to the Hippogeum or out to the climb up to whatever level of the top we can get to, and you see their faces, that level of excitement, you know, because I kind of feed off more the level of excitement of what my clients have. So whether it's the art or the antiquity, then I kind of go, oh, wow, if they're really, really loving the antiquity, then at lunch, no matter what, we're getting to the Pantheon, you know, and you know, that's just such a spectacular sight to bring people through the Pantheon.
Great. So you're saying basically on what you gauge from the people and how you know they're going to enjoy it, what they're going to, and so you can just kind of tell. You're like, okay, these guys are really going to love this place, and that's what's exciting for you. That becomes that moment. Wow, that's very much in the moment kind of thing. I tell people basically that it depends on what I am studying or what I've read, a new book that I've read. So it really does depend on that moment, because, you know, as guides, what we do, and I don't know if people understand necessarily about this, so I think it's really interesting, is that you always get kind of conflicting information from time to time with all of these different things that we know, that we've learned. And so you kind of gauge in your own opinion what you want to tell people. So it's like what Rome is to me and how I've perceived and understand things. But then I get really, really excited. You know, I can tell you immediately right now, and I'm just like loving it, because, you know, when you learn something new and it kind of really affects and sweetens your tour, it's like a, like adding vanilla extract or something. It's just like, it like gives you this revitalization and gives you this kind of sense of energy. And you know, when I was doing my virtual St. Peter's tour, so I read this great book about the old Church of St. Peter's in the British school. Then recently I have been watching Mary Beard on YouTube, and I really enjoyed that. So I'm really, just gung-ho about how she's kind of enthused about the regular Romans. And she's getting me into, and I'm just like, oh my God, I really have to work on this, is the inscriptions. That's like a whole world unto itself.
Oh, I love when she talks about inscriptions. I love, love, love that. And that's when you just want to run them right over to either the Museo Nazionale or the Capitoline.
Yeah, yeah. But then it's like, yeah, you gotta make sure you know what you're talking about. Yeah, because she talked about one guy. She was talking about one guy who basically says, because she says the dead, you know, the people have no records of who they are, what identifies them, what do they do? It's like that they leave these descriptions when they die. And that lets people know. Sure. She said there was this one who was like purpurorum. She said he was a dyer. That was his job. Uh-huh. That's what he did. But not only that, but that he specified that he dyed the color purple. So huge thing. Do you remember that? And I was like, wow.
Yes, I do.
Incredible. Really so great, because we tend to forget that it's not all Augustus, Julius Caesar, or crazy emperors, or, you know, this kind of thing. It's much, that's much true. More. I remember also, I'm really kind of totally enthused because I had a great tour that I had followed in the catacombs, and illumination, I think, how things were lit, you know, with oil lamps in the catacombs or in the streets of Rome. The oil lamps you see with olive oil was the oil that was supplied, you know, in the Colosseum. You could see in the display cases, and then, you know, candle lights. Because when we look at these paintings, all of these things we see today are illuminated by electric light. But what did it look like for people? You know, I think all of these things are how the streets were illuminated at night in all times of Rome. I mean, all that stuff is just really, so I'm really excited about that stuff. And so I'm really excited to include that those things in my tours. I find that they kind of help me make the tour fresh and not stale. I feel like, you know, if I don't want the tour to be stale. Now I'm reading about the families who made Rome.
I love that book.
Yeah, I've been communicating with him on Twitter. I'm hoping to ask Anthony, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name correctly, but I'm hoping to invite him on our podcast.
Oh, fantastic.
I don't want to read the whole book first, but I've read all about the Mate family and the Chenchi family, and talk about like Game of Thrones. This is like, this is nothing compared to these guys. It's amazing.
But, you know, that makes the other part of the tour come alive, because it's fun going through the back streets, and it just depends, like, if you're going to somebody's hotel where you're picking them up and you're just like, ah, yes, I remember who was murdered around the corner and what took place from this other family here who was against another family on the other side. But it's true. And I understand what you're saying, because I would say, every time I finish or even sometimes reread another book that I absolutely love, then I just go, you know, you just need to talk about it, and you have new stories and new things. It just keeps the excitement level going.
Oh yeah, I know. It's amazing to me, because sometimes what we tell people evolves, what we tell people changes. And then sometimes you forget, and you're like, oh yeah, there's that. And I haven't been using that in such a long time. I remember reading in some guidebook, maybe it was the Companion Guide of Rome, which I love, by Georgina Mason. But I remember that they spoke about within the Arch of Constantine, there was, they said that there was, Michelangelo signed his name inside the Arch of Constantine. Mm. Now, I saw on Facebook some, because they were doing some restoration work at the Arch of Constantine.
Right.
It's all down now, but they had like a Facebook Live inside, walking in it. So I got to see, and I think I shared it with the WhatsApp group, but I think I got, mm-hmm. we got to go inside, and they even said, here's Michelangelo's signature. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I completely forgot about that. I mean, do we really know it's Michelangelo's name? I don't know, but there's that story, and then they see it right there. I thought that was pretty interesting.
No, it is. And when you said Michelangelo too, it reminded me of, after, I think you and I by chance were in New York and got to see the Michelangelo exhibit.
Yes.
Which was, you know, a once in a lifetime type of exhibit, which is something else we do to keep our own tours fresh, is around, you know, anytime you travel, it's going to see these museums. So that was at the Met. And I picked up the book of Michelangelo's notebook. And it is one thing that I use as a reference point for tours in the Vatican, but also with the other architecture around the city as we're bopping back and forth, even Capitoline Hill, because it's not telling stories of a person. It's just reading their letters. And you just get this feeling how there's narrative to begin with, setting up each chapter, and then it's Michelangelo's letters, and it's a book, it's like a Bible, letters plus his poetry that are kind of they try to time the poetry, so you feel like you're inside his head while he's painting the Sistine, or you're inside his head while he's getting frustrated about that, you know, monument for Julius II, or he's inside his head as he's, oh, now I'm back working in Florence, you know, for the Medici Chapel. But it just also brings so much wonderful flavor, whether it's in the street of the city or talking to somebody about the Sistine, because you feel like you know them more on a personal level, to just see their words, their writings, which
it brings these people to life. But it's incredible about Michelangelo with his acerbic wit, you know, I mean, Giorgio Vasari saying, oh, look at Michelangelo, see this room, it only took me 100 days, and he said, you know, and it looks it. Did I ever tell you that? Because Saverio Sebastiani, one of the people who works with us, you know, once, I don't think he listens to the podcast, so I'll tell the story anyway, but he was saying, oh, you know, Rob, I work out in my house. I don't go to the gym because I don't believe in it. I don't think I need to do that. So I work out in my apartment, and I think that works out. And I was like, si vede. I was like, it looks like you work out in your house, not with lifting weights. I think
you're one of the few people I can use that joke with, that you know exactly what I'm saying to you.
Exactly. Yeah, people don't know that because you're from Crestwood and I'm from Stanford, that we grew up not too far apart and we kind of know our cultural references. And so that's why we get along pretty well. Well, anyway, darling, I think that we've kind of covered the importance of Rome in a day. Now, if you could say things of like for people to understand, so they like say, okay, I have no choice. I have to do Rome in a day. Is that something I'm going to regret doing? Or is it something I'm going to enjoy doing? Like, what are the things you want to say in like a quick soundbite saying to convince people that it is okay?
Okay. You know what I would say? It is taking a city which can be overwhelming if you have limited time, because where on earth do you start, and do you get stuck and messed up not knowing lines and tickets and this and that? It's taking a city that you might go, oh yeah, I didn't really like that city. Well, why? Well, we stood in line, we did this. Or saying this was the most amazing experience, because we take the thought process out of it for you. If you have limited time, I would say, hands down, this is the tour for you. It is the tour for you. It will turn that day into wandering and kind of looking at pretty, or wandering and getting maybe frustrating because you don't even know where to start, to being able to effortlessly glide through some of the most important areas of antiquity, mm-hmm. of art, of religion, and just beauty and fountains. And we always throw in some really good food, guys. So I'd say you want to really experience the city. It's something you will not regret.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I was so funny because while you were saying that, I was thinking of the word effortless. For me too, no matter who you are, no matter what kind of level of what you're hoping to get, that we kind of help realize that for you, and, you know, making you feel like you've accomplished and you've gotten everything you needed done, it's going to be taken care of for you. And you're going to be going with a great storyteller who knows how best to put and show Rome, which cannot be an easy city necessarily, but we put it in its best light, and we do it with a lot of fun, with going to a place to eat. You know, like today I went and we had a grattacicca, you know, so I showed them a great place because it was really hot. And so you see the guy scraping by hand because he has the block of ice and filling up with, you know, the flavored syrups, their Italian version, the Roman version of an ice that, you know, it's just those are the moments that are memorable. The moments of seeing something special, seeing going into the Roman Forum, doing many, many different things. Yeah, those are all the great things that makes the city great. I think you and I and so many other people who work with us, we do realize what a gift it is to be a storyteller, but to be able to show people some of the most beautiful things in the world.
Oh, it's one of those things where you say, would you ever go back and, you know, go back to your old life, which is now after 15 years. And I can say hands down, like, oh, absolutely not. Every day I'm thankful. Every day.
Exactly. Exactly, Batman.
Okay. Exactly.
All right, Grayson, as always, it's a great pleasure to be able to have time to chat with you. Remember, everybody, if you have any questions about us, about the podcast, about our YouTube channel, which we do a lot of those lovely destination videos showing you every little thing you can think about Rome, and then we're going to be doing new ones in September showing you stuff about Venice, Florence, Pompeii, and Naples and the Amalfi Coast, keep a lookout for us or ask us these questions at office@througheternity.com. Grayson, un bacione, un abbraccio.
Un bacione.
For your future birthday. And I
thank
look forward
you, thank
to seeing
you. You too.
That's right. Ciao, darling.
Ciao. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you for listening to our TE Talks with Guides. We have a new episode every Wednesday. Please subscribe to get an alert when each podcast comes out. Rate us and tell people how you enjoyed it and share it on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Most importantly, if you enjoyed it, send us a feedback about the show. Also, if you are curious about what some of these people and places we talked about look like, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel and watch the video on this podcast where we have inserted special images for you to further enjoy the story.